When we started writing our thoughts down on paper, it opened up endless possibilities. Ideas could grow beyond the borders of the mind, and it changed the world. Somewhere along the way, we lost touch with paper, distracted by devices made for every purpose except thinking and focus. On edge, waiting for the next notification. But what if new technology didn't pull us away from paper, but brought us closer to it? Listen. That's not paper. It's the sound of the new Remarkable Paper Pro, rewriting the future. A paper tablet with a true color ink display, gentle reading light, and unheard of tactility, with digital features for taking notes, thinking, and organizing, without any distractions. Paper is about to change the world again. Get your paper tablet at Remarkable.com today.
When Ryan's, when it's time to begin, it's on the Rewind Around with John Pollock and Waiting the A-Team that makes sense of these things we see in the ring every week on TV. It's Rewind Around for Monday night, download a Tuesday morning from the Post Wrestling site. It's Rewind Around for Monday night on USA Now on the John and Way, take the mic.
And hello everybody, welcome to Rewind Around. New night, new week. Here we are at postwrestling.com. For you YouTube viewers out there, you can see me sporting my wonderful blue sweater and Way representing Giant Baba.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
It's a special occasion when you bring out one Shohei.
Not really.
Is it not?
It's just one of my rotations.
It's in the rotation.
Yeah, okay. It's just one of my shirts, really.
Okay. How are you? How's life? How's everything?
Like good. Yeah. Nothing to complain about. How are you? How was your weekend?
I had a good weekend. I went to, have you heard of that movie Wild Robot? It's gotten, people are raving about this thing. It's a kid's movie, but it was very good. Kept my attention for the hour and 45 minutes.
Okay. Was it better than The Apprentice?
It might have been. It might have been. Very. All right. You could not come up with two different movies, probably, mm-hmm. than The Apprentice and Wild Robot. But that was good. My rule when I take my kids to see a movie is, if it grabs me in the first 20 minutes, I will not put my headphones on. And this one kept my attention for the whole movie. So I watched the whole thing. Liked it. Good length. Nice story. Feel good ending. And a lot of a nice allegory for life. Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. I don't even know what it's about, but you sold me already.
Yeah, you would enjoy it. Like that's all you could ask for movies that have some value for the parent that is taking their kids to see something.
Okay.
The Shrek effect.
I'll never watch it, but thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay, well, great review. Okay. Well, we have I just went southern there, but we have a lot of news to discuss. Starting things off, Way, Samantha Irvin gone from WWE, kind of out of nowhere today, that she posted a message to X stating that she was moving on from the company and bidding everyone a farewell, had a lot of compliments to the staff, to Triple H, to the fans, to everybody. And just like that, she was gone. She wasn't even part of Raw tonight. They brought in Lillian Garcia, and it was sort of just this abrupt, Samantha Irvin's moving on, and Lillian Garcia's here. It was a very strange story that certainly feels like it just kind of crept up out of nowhere. And, yeah, you've got everybody. First of all, never doubt the online wrestling fan base that will just lose their minds over everything. I mean, just something else. For this, but Ricochet denying that she is going to AEW, so that will either be true or not true. But this, you can certainly read this of two ways. One being that you would think, if she wants to stay in wrestling, there's one obvious option, and maybe she's looking at spreading her wings elsewhere. She's an extremely talented individual. She just did the national anthem at the Raiders game last Sunday, like on behalf of WWE, of course, with WrestleMania being at Allegiant Stadium. She was sent there with Rey Mysterio and I believe Braun Strowman. So, I mean, obviously not breaking any news. Like, she was extremely popular in this role. And to me, in the couple of years that she did this, I mean, to me, made an indelible mark in terms of the role that she filled.
Certainly, yeah, yeah. I think you often hear people like maybe feel upset at some announcer leaving, or like a backstage correspondent leaving, or even a commentator leaving. I feel like the reaction to this one is bigger than usual, and I think so much of it is because she has been unanimously praised for somebody in this role. Not just that, I would say she has probably made a last person I feel like to garner that's this sort of thing is Renee. And what's similar about those two is that they've managed to take a role that's otherwise very generic, and they have made their own distinctive spin on it, in ways that have elevated that role. And she
Let's also couch the fact that these are also positions that were by design, mm-hmm. from the top down, to be generic. I mean, yeah. When you read like Justin Roberts' book, or just hear from like some of the announcers that like Dasha Gonzalez, when she was in that role, and it was like they did not want you kind of creating any sort of emotion or character behind you, and it's a very hard role to be able to establish that kind of connection with an audience with. And to your point, Renee did, and certainly Samantha Irvin did.
Yeah, I can understand why they wouldn't want all their announcers to be creative and to add their own spin on things, because oftentimes maybe it might not be that good. But it tells you something when, you know, somebody like Samantha Irvin has been able to find ways to actually somehow make her interesting announcements, unique announcements, great. And you know, I think Lenny Hart is who comes to mind, you know, like not that extreme at all, but at least introducing an element of that sort of, you know, a Lenny Hart type of announcement to the WWE, which I never thought in a million years we'd be able to see. She was great at it. I think her enthusiasm always came across, you know, in her, whenever they had a camera on her ringside. So somebody who I would have considered, you know, probably would have had that job for as long as they wanted, or she wanted. And who knows what her next steps are. But I have to think they'd be good enough reasons for them for her not to continue.
Yeah, it just seemed like this was one, like this certainly did not have the feel of, you know, that this was something that has been in the works for some time. And it just felt like a very abrupt shift, and like not even letting her come out and do like one final show, for instance, tonight. Mm-hmm. Like that felt very, it was a very awkward transition. Awkward for Lillian Garcia too, to just be kind of introduced in this way, and it was like a one line explanation by Joe Tessitore that, you know, if you were not online today and you just hear this, I mean, it is kind of, you might have even missed it. Like, it was that brief and quick.
Yeah. So I mean, does it give you something to speculate about? You know, what
I mean, that's all it would be until we know more about what the circumstances were of it. But I certainly it does feel odd, the fact that, okay, so she's leaving. Like, what is so concerning about doing like a farewell broadcast, or at least working out like, what was it? Hey, I need to be done ASAP. Or was it a case of, you know, sometimes you, like WWE could be like, okay, you want out, you're done now. Like, we just don't know. We don't know yet what the conversation was like, and why it felt like it was so fast that it was done. But obviously she was extremely complimentary in her message that she put out today. I wanted to talk to you as well about this article that we didn't get a chance to talk to since it came out. And that was the Rolling Stone article that spoke with six ex-WWE writers, only one of which went on the record. This is Michael Leonardi, who we discussed back when he made this post on LinkedIn earlier this year, and spoke of an incident he had a number of years ago with Vince McMahon, where he was in charge of a segment where this was on Martin Luther King Jr. Day, and you were going to have multiple performers, multiple black performers in a segment, including R-Truth, Mark Henry, maybe Kofi Kingston, and then the punchline would be Neville coming in and stating, "I have a dream too, and that is to win the Royal Rumble." It was R-Truth, Titus O'Neil, and Mark Henry. Do you not remember this story?
I do. Thank you for reminding me.
"I have a dream too, to win the Royal Rumble." And
Fuck.
He stated that the script called for Neville to speak up and tell everyone else he's got a dream too, and that dream is to win the Royal Rumble, referencing the civil rights leader's historic 1963 speech at the Lincoln Memorial. Leonardi says that Neville told him he was uncomfortable delivering the line, and with a limited amount of time, the bit was changed so that R-Truth said the line instead. Leonardi says his boss at the time, Dave Kapoor, approved the change, and this led to McMahon ending up like pretty much dressing down Leonardi and stating, "You didn't give me what I wanted." And there was, this was, you know, one major incident that he had and vocalized. But I mean, if you read this article, I don't know if you're going to come away with it of like any sort of new revelatory opinion on what the environment is like in the writer's room, but I think it's telling right away that five of them wouldn't even go on the record, that were still like concerned about whether it be retribution from the company, retribution online that they would receive, that they didn't even want to put their names out there and attach to it. I think that's telling in and of itself. And I guess also noteworthy is that Vince McMahon, through a spokesperson, actually did respond to several of the things that were alleged, including this Martin Luther King Jr. story, where the spokesperson acknowledged that McMahon had an extremely hands-on approach with WWE scripts, adding, "That's why the idea of him suggesting or approving the use of a famous Martin Luther King Jr. quote for a punchline to be used by a white British character is so ridiculous. It simply didn't happen." I don't for an ounce of me doubt that this exact thing happened and that this was exactly as this writer outlines. I don't need to know this writer. I completely believe that this is exactly how it happened.
Is it any more ridiculous than having Vince writing himself to say the N-word?
Like, of this description of this Martin Luther King Jr. joke, would not even make the top 50, I think, of offensive things that we have seen. Maybe not even the top 100. I completely believe that this thing happened exactly as it was outlined.
Well, listen, like you mentioned, John, maybe none of this stuff is all that shocking to you and I or the people that might listen to a podcast like this, but there's a whole new audience right now that is aware of Vince McMahon and how weird this dude is. And an article in Rolling Stone highlighting some of these things, I think, will be shocking for a lot of people that may have just, you know, learned about this side of Vince through the Mr. McMahon documentary series. So it means something different when you're seeing all these major platforms now being interested in these sort of McMahon stories.
It's a great point that I think you are looking, like, how many people that have worked at that company have seen that Mr. McMahon documentary and had their own like laundry list of issues they may have had. It does state in the article, one former writer says that people would comment on her outfits and touch her in ways that felt unnecessary, even though the behaviors weren't explicitly sexual. She says it felt like a means of controlling her in a way that didn't happen to the men in the writer's room. She said, quote, "They would touch me where they would have me come closer to them. They would pull me by my waist to come somewhere or move closer to them. I'm just super aware that it's kind of close to my butt, and most people don't touch me by the waist ever. I thought, this is strange." Two former writers tell Rolling Stone they took their complaints to human resources. One was subsequently fired from her position, a decision she interpreted as retaliation. According to former writers, enough female writers complained about their treatment to WWE HR in 2020 that leadership held a Zoom meeting they referred to as a women's forum in which the affected writers were encouraged to collectively air their grievances. One former writer says that she grew emotional when she told everyone in the meeting that she didn't feel safe with her coworkers. Another woman who attended the meeting says the leadership staffers there were dismissive of the women's claims. They did it just to appease us, but they didn't take it seriously at all. After the Zoom meeting, the writers who spoke to Rolling Stone said that there was an in-person meeting with the entire writer's room in which senior leadership allegedly told everyone they were acting like middle schoolers and not to go to HR if they have any future problems. One male senior staffer essentially said, "Come to me if you have a problem," one former writer alleges, which is such bullshit because he's part of the problem too. He enabled Vince and everything that he did.
Hmm.
So, I mean, that is again, you are going to have people that are going to paint this company into these two very distinct eras. But I think this is very important stuff when we hear, at the Royal Rumble press conference, and Paul Levesque is asked about what changes are being made, and his answer is everything. Or Shawn Michaels stating that there were recent changes made and we'll be happy to provide you with those changes, and those have never seen the light of day. It is one thing to just say the right thing, but we have no tangible evidence of what protocols have been reinforced, have been enacted during this whole shift. Like, what has been done in light of these horrific allegations that allegedly went down in the company's own offices and other issues like this? Like, what is a role that an HR plays? And if we are to theorize of a writer, of an employee, of an independent contractor that is in a position where they feel that they are being mistreated, if they are being assaulted in any type of way, is that fear component still there, that I do not want to rock the boat? And do you still have those avenues where you can report things anonymously? Like, all of these things are questions that get brought up, and there's really
maybe not enough, because I think
not at all enough. And you have these arguments about, these press conferences. And one of the reasons we beat the drum on this is, like, that is literally our only dialogue to get any of these types of answers. There is no other. If you want to submit your questions to WWE, they are not getting back to you on this. If you, like, literally those couple of questions that Paul Levesque fields every couple of pay-per-views, that is literally our only dialogue on the record with any person at an executive level in WWE. And that's why those press conferences are important, because that's all we have. That's all that mainly, like, 99% of the media have, unless you are an outlet that is going to get a Paul Levesque. And how extremely rare are those situations?
Well, I continue to ask why they would even open themselves up to that limited opportunity to field questions like this, because it's not in their interest to answer those questions. It's not in their interest to acknowledge that these things at one time might have been an issue for the company, right? I mean, that's still very much, I think, their playbook, to just basically pretend that everything's always been great, and not to make a bigger deal out of something.
And that's so wrapped up in so much of this, is that at the end of the day, you protect the business, you protect the company, and this stuff just gets... Like, I don't think anyone has any doubt of these issues that go on, and the fact that there are probably so many writers and wrestlers and employees that have had experiences. Yes, and there was a portion of this article that is dedicated to, like, Michael Leonardi talking about, like, the good parts of working at WWE. That's great. But when people say, hey, you've got to talk about the good... When you go to work every day, you should be having good experiences. That is the expectation that should be met. This stuff should absolutely be given the focus when things do not go right. And this should not be happening. Women should not be being grabbed by the waist to come closer. Or stories like Ronda Rousey shared with Drew Gulak. Like, this is not normal workplace behavior that goes on. And so often this stuff is just ignored, or you're just so deterred from raising a stink, because then you're a snitch, or you are the one that is creating the problem instead of being a victim of a much larger problem.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's the problem with I think the nature of this sort of business, where you're being given promotions and you're not necessarily there to, I mean, you earn them to some degree, but for the most part, you're chosen for your roles. And that, I think, takes away a lot of the autonomy of people to complain.
Let's talk a bit about NXT. In 2 weeks' time, they are running the 2300 Arena in Philadelphia. This will be on a Wednesday night on November the 6th, head-to-head with Dynamite, because NXT is getting moved from Tuesday because of election coverage the night before. And so tonight's show, Raw, was in Philadelphia. November 2nd, Collision is in Philadelphia. And then just days later, NXT is in Philadelphia for NXT for that show on the Wednesday night. So Philadelphia is getting a lot of shows over the next 2 weeks. But yes, they made this announcement on Monday, confirming a report that was in the Observer last week that the arena had been booked, and still trying to confirm if it was going to be this Wednesday, November 6th, which is obviously going to be the next big TV episode that NXT builds up for. And we got the start of the promotion tonight on Raw with a commercial.
I think it's pretty exciting, you know, now that I think they've seen some success with these first two editions of NXT on CW. I think they're going to be constantly looking for ways to add some sort of special theme, some special reason for you to tune into NXT on the CW as they continue to make their mark and they continue to make that a destination program for a lot of WWE fans. And I think it's really smart, you know, really. I find it so interesting how NXT, even though it's a place that focuses on developing young talent, how much they make use of nostalgia, whether it be in the names of like former WCW events or, you know, whatever, what have you. I don't know, just like having Shawn even, you know, as a constant presence. How much they use nostalgia to give attention to what is essentially a show to showcase your upcoming talent. But, you know, doing a show like this, I think directly caters to the type of audience that NXT craves. It's not just maybe a younger audience, but it's an audience that are your diehards, the ones that, you know, still feel the warm and fuzzy feelings about ECW.
It's leveraging. It's leveraging that intellectual property. It's giving us that 360-degree monetization model that is going to be the new standard bearer. And I, of all the brands, I love the ECW IP. I love that IP as a child. And now it's matured. Now it's an adult brand that we can bring to the CW. And that to me is, that's what sponsors share. That's what sponsors want to hear.
I like it. It's getting really good. Your Mark Shapiro.
I'm working on it. Yeah. It's what I do in my downtime.
Yeah, I found it interesting how maybe the original concept of bringing ECW under the WWE fold was very much this. It was a developmental system for your younger talent. Yep. Except on sci-fi. And now I think I'm assuming they'll do a much better job of integrating ECW nostalgia into the show.
Do you find it interesting that as we talk about all these attendance woes for AEW and the arenas that they're booking, mm-hmm. that for NXT, I mean, they went to Chesterfield, Missouri, and they were in front of like 1,200 people.
Yeah.
Great atmosphere for that brand. And for this, like, they're going to have a similar sized audience for this. Like, you've been to the 2,300 arena, and that's going to be a huge plus to the interest in this show. Now, you don't have typically a lot of these arenas that have that kind of history and nostalgia. But
AEW could have run this. There's nothing stopping them
from running that arena either. And it's the way they have renovated. Like, this went from like just a dump to like one of the nicer arenas of its size in the country. Mm-hmm. But I mean, this is this size venue is a huge positive for people. It's going to be a lot of people's reason to tune in for this. And I don't quite buy the idea of like these big arenas and the whole perception issue of necessarily like you run to what your audience demand is. And I don't think the idea of, you know, 1,200 people, but they're all reacting, I think that's so much more beneficial. And you can weigh the pros and cons, but this is a great move by NXT, and it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I really do want to know what Tony means when he says, like, you know, like what amenities are better for people. Like, you have more, like, what was the parking situation like at the 2300 arena? Do you remember? We took an Uber there. So,
yeah, we took an Uber. I can't tell you. I did see a car accident right out in front of the
did
building.
You?
So we avoided that.
So I believe there's only one bathroom, and it's like, it's a very impressive bathroom simply for the fact that you get to see the ECW mural with, like, you know, all of those signatures and everything. So, I mean, that I think, you know, an audience will be okay with. Listen, whatever. We can kind of, you know, talk about like why the real reason why Tony chooses to like book these giant venues time after time. All we want, maybe there's something more to it. Maybe it's as exactly, you know, that he stated, but it's it's harming the perception of the product. Whereas I think, you know, in NXT, they are using this limited audience to their advantage in some ways by booking venues like this. So who do you think appears? Do you think we get any ECW alumni or is it strictly a name only?
Oh, just based off the commercial, they're totally going to lean into that. I don't think it's going to be an ECW nostalgia show, but cameos, I think they've kind of set the table for that, whether it's a Sandman doing a run-in. Heyman might be too much for that show. Like, that comes down to the storyline. Like, he's been left off TV for a reason. I don't know if you necessarily want to bring him back for that. But, yeah, I totally imagine they're going to have some cameos there for that. Maybe Sandman is your best bet for.
I could see the FBI with the family.
That would be my second choice. Yeah, the FBI. Maybe they'll get Chili Willy.
Chili Willy, I don't know if I remember him.
Oh, okay. Well, what do you think about them running in what is going to be maybe the closest contested state, the closest state in Pennsylvania the day after the election? I mean, we might have a disputed finish from the night before that NXT will be running. Maybe they'll get Josh Shapiro to show up.
I have no thoughts about that. Well, maybe
Mark Calloway has thoughts because today he dropped his big release with Donald Trump. We're going to play the entire hour-long interview here. No, we're going to give you a sample. This is about 60 seconds of what I am sure most of you missed today.
Yeah. Bad things coming out of this.
Numbers, you know, yeah. This is good. This is the Donald Trump that people really don't get to see.
Mark.
Yes, sir.
After you do an episode with the president.
Yes, sir.
You got to celebrate.
Oh, well, I intend on it.
Oh, yeah. And you know what? Tonight, I'm going to do some celebrating.
Are you?
Oh, yeah.
Do tell.
I came to New York packing.
Oh.
Packing them blue chews.
Oh, what?
Got them blue little after dinner mint.
Oh, you talking about celebrating. Oh,
we're going to celebrate good times.
Come on.
Oh, yeah, it's happening tonight.
It's a celebration.
It's happening tonight because of our friends over at Blue Chew.
Man, yeah. I tell you what.
You know what? Hit me with that motto. Chew it.
And do it.
Oh, yeah.
That was the clip you chose.
That was podcast host Mark Calloway and Quagmire from the 6 Feet Under podcast. I could not sit through this thing. I skimmed through it. It was the highlight might have been that I saw at least was at the end, Mark Calloway wants to ask him an actual policy question. And it's regarding preserving women's sports, not allowing men to play in women's sports. And he brings in his daughter. Before he even asks the question, he apologizes to Donald Trump if he's putting him on the spot. Does preface with, we're not journalists here, and that's what this was. This was a fan club of two that got to sit with the presidential candidate here. And yes, Donald Trump is not going to allow those that were born male to participate in women's sports. He will strike that down the very first day. And Mark Calloway wanted to put a face to this issue and brought his daughter in, to who is a football player, and I'm sure she was just thrilled to be used here in this setting.
Yeah. I think I've listened to maybe about 60%, you know, just kind of had it off in the background. I think it very much for the first, I would say 30%, it was actually Donald Trump interviewing Mark Calloway. Like, he just came across like somebody who was very fascinated.
What happens if someone gets mad in the ring? What happens?
Yeah. It was kind of questions like that. And I guess
this being the same guy that thought Vince McMahon died in that limo explosion. So this we are talking about an individual that seems very captivated by the storytelling.
Sure. I guess for me, like, I just kind of look at something like this and I ask the bigger question of, like, what exactly is this for? How is this integrating or at least like increasing Donald Trump's appeal to maybe an Undertaker, a pro wrestling audience? Do you think it might have had that effect?
Oh, this is I don't think this particular podcast is going to do a whole lot.
There's not much about policy, or at least from what I've listened to.
No,
it's really just a conversation between friends.
I mean, I picked that clip and what preceded it is like this is trying for Donald Trump to go on these shows and be humanized and to play mm-hmm. off of these individuals, which he does very well in like, you tell me, like, he's just having your, like, this is to appeal to a young male voter that is hopefully a disenfranchised voter that is open to voting for a Donald Trump. And this has been a strategy that has been very clear from his UFC appearances to look at all of the podcasts that he's doing. Like, is Donald Trump waking up every morning and listening to Andrew Schultz? I doubt it. But these are audiences that they believe can be key difference makers in what's going to be an ultra close election.
It really is just selling your personality and getting your face out there. And I guess, I don't know, trying to come across as a likable person. You know, there was a lot of Undertaker, you know, and his co-host sort of bringing up the Butler assassination attempt and almost, I guess, celebrating it, you know, talking about how cool it was, asking if, like, you know, he has paintings of it. And maybe the most interesting thing I heard him say was Trump was talking about Dwayne Johnson. And he said, I didn't know if Dwayne Johnson ever liked me, but then he kind of outed Dwayne Johnson as somebody who told, correct me if I'm wrong, John, didn't he tell Dana? And then Dana told Trump that, like, Dwayne Johnson thought it was really cool what Trump did, I guess, after the assassination attempt, like that whole thing.
I didn't hear that exact spot, but I did read a recap of it, and that's what it sounded like, is that he went through his press secretary, Dana White, to get that
sure.
message across.
Yeah, so. And I wonder how Dwayne Johnson would have felt like, about something like that coming out there. Yeah. But
Are you? Remember that during COVID? Dwayne Johnson's big promo, where are you?
Yeah, and then you just have had some of your usual Trumpisms, you know, like calling it the China flu. He somehow, like, I think mistook it as, like, 2017.
Mark Calloway corrected him, right?
I don't think so. Yeah, just, you know, I think the usual shit that you might get from him. For me, it's just notable seeing The Undertaker in this light, as you kind of played that clip, John. It's more of a continued sort of breakdown of, like, just how different this guy is from, you know, how protective he's been throughout his entire career.
Oh, he was starstruck in this interview
like
setting.
It. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Well, I mean, your 60 minutes is there if you want to check it out. But, overall, like, if you're someone that, well, everyone listening to this is probably following it through the wrestling side of this. But as a strategy, like, there's a reason his team is putting him in front of this guy this close, like 2 weeks out from the election, and where they feel this is a gateway to of the audience that is listening to it, and how Donald Trump is coming across in this. Like, as he even jokes in the thing, I turned down 60 minutes to come do your stupid show. There's a reason he's making these calculated decisions. And this is a very safe environment for him as well, which is, like, why am I going to go in the line of fire in some of these? Like, I'm trying to appeal to these voters, and that's the strategy. And maybe it's going to work, maybe it's not. This is going to, you know, by all expectations, be an exceptionally close race. And the margins are such that Donald Trump feels that The Undertaker, if he's going to give me a percentage of help, a fraction of a percentage, then I'm going to sit down with him for 60 minutes.
Well, listen, he's getting, like, listen, we'd probably talk about him in some form anyway, but, like, a podcast like ours that doesn't usually cover politics is talking about something like this. We're not necessarily talking about Kamala Harris on, you know, any of the podcasts she's done. So I don't think it's bad strategy, you know? Like, he doesn't have to, like, we're not necessarily talking about policy or anything. We're just simply talking about him showing his face, and that's maybe how this race is going to be won.
All right. Well, you can check that out if you so care.
Prescriptions, copays, lab tests. Even with insurance, healthcare can cost thousands every year. But not for me, because I'm enrolled in VA healthcare. My service was then. My benefits are now. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Support for this post-wrestling podcast comes from those of you who have picked up our merch over at Chopped Tees. T-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, and hats from post-wrestling and our network of shows, including the NWA Podcast, Poison Rana, The Long and Winding Royal Road, WrestleNomics, and MCU Later. Free shipping to almost anywhere in the entire world. No minimum spend required. Tag us in a photo of yourself wearing our merch on social media, and I'll even send you a signed postcard while supplies last. That's chop-tees.com/postwrestling.
Did you get to see any of Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling over the weekend? It dropped with two shows on Saturday and Sunday night. They put out a graphic promoting that both nights were sellouts. Did not see a number. When TNA ran, the last time they ran back-to-back nights, they did about 600 each night at St. Clair College. I didn't get a strong grasp of the audience watching it, but it wouldn't surprise me if it was like in that range or maybe under. But I thought watching this, it was very interesting to see it. First of all, like, if you take away the branding, you would have been able to convince someone this was a TNA show. And it looked, felt, sounded, everything felt like the TNA production of things. And what this was this is Scott D'Amore's vision of TNA, only instead of a WWE working relationship, he's got one with AEW. And that's what this kind of felt like. And I thought the star of these two nights, to no surprise, was Konosuke Takeshita, who had these two main events were, I thought, sensational matches that he had with Speedball Mike Bailey and Josh Alexander the second night.
Yeah, 100%. You know, and maybe just even using this conversation as a barometer of success. You know, we're talking about a promotion's first weekend, first two shows, and the fact that we're talking about it, and the fact that I've seen considerable buzz about these two matches in particular, that's a huge accomplishment for somebody just launching, isn't it? You know, I think the card quality was up there, and I think, you know, created good enough anticipation from the moment that it was announced. When you got to the show production-wise was of a pretty high quality. You know, when we're talking about indie, like you mentioned, John, I think it was very reminiscent of, you know, like what you would kind of see for an Impact. But I was impressed that they got like, you know, video packages and like just even having something like having instant replay. I don't think that's necessarily a small feat, you know, for somebody that's just kind of up and running. But of course you have like Mackenzie Mitchell, you've got Mauro Ranallo, like, you know, high quality level broadcasters that are attached to the product. It gave it a very, I would say, high level production feel for something that is, you know, just on Triller, for instance.
I mean, at the very least, you come out of this and it, you know, Scott D'Amore has, you know, not really divulged too much of what the long-term play is. Like, he's mentioned the fact of wanting to run Maple Leaf Gardens next year. And, you know, you're looking for, first of all, you get two nights and now you have a concept that you can bring to potential advertisers, to, like, I don't know if TV is something that's in their future.
Does it need to be? Like, well, what does TV necessarily do for a promotion like this?
The question is, like, what is the business plan for this? Is it to just run your super indie a couple times a year? Because these are not cheap shows. Mm-hmm. Like, to produce, even with your working relationships, like, this is, like, these were, like, you know, high production shows, like not WWE level, but right at your TNA level, and not even that far off from like your, like, this talent roster was just from top to bottom. Like, you had some really stellar names attached to this. Say nothing of, you know, Amora Ranallo is not doing this as some favor just to fly to Windsor for the weekend. And I thought Moro added, I thought he was greatly missed on the wrestling commentary side of things. And I think he was just took to right back into the flow of things, calling pro wrestling. I know that there were a number of performers on the shows. Like, it was a big deal to them, the fact that Moro was doing this show. Like, he added that kind of credibility for talents that wanted to work these shows as well. So I thought he did a really great job with Don Callis. And yeah, I think that in terms of you do have a hook, like, you have this very heavy Canadian branding that you can take to different markets. And I think a first time you run in Toronto, you can maybe play off some of that nostalgia. But, you know, Maple Leaf Gardens, we're talking like generations removed from where that was sort of a mecca of pro wrestling. And it's a far cry from what it once was. It's now underneath a grocery store.
It's above.
Is it above?
Okay. Yeah. Madame Athletic is above the Loblaws. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I agree. Like I grew up in the city. Like the name Maple Leaf Wrestling doesn't mean a whole lot to me, but there is, I would say, a real space for a super indie in this city, maybe even in this country. And that's kind of the feel you got from watching the show. Now, it was like, you know, obviously a lot of like the Scott DeBoer connections, and a lot of guys that you might even still currently see on TNA Wrestling. But what I think this show came across by the end, especially, was that it felt like an interesting little kind of crossroads where an New Japan talent and an AEW talent can coexist with Impact talent, and maybe some random, you know, people showing up like a Ricochet, for instance. So that all was very exciting, and if they can maintain that quality and standard throughout their next shows, that's, I think, going to receive a lot of attention from people here.
Yeah, it was worth bringing up that they both nights aired commercials for Bound for Glory, and you had Moro running down the lineups for Dynamite coming up this week as well. So you obviously had that that relationship and, you know, cross promotion. And it does somewhat blow my mind that here you have Scott DeMore, who has this non-compete clause in place that ended up with him and TNA working this out so he could do these shows with TNA talent a week before Bound for Glory, where, you know, you want people to buy this show and a week later buy your show. And forget about the fact that in the market, like, Bound for Glory is taking place, it's 25 minutes away from St. Clair College where this is playing. So it's like you're going to probably have quite the Venn diagram of fans that are going to both. But it really does tell you the kind of different approach, because that would be all the reasons you have a no compete is that something like that could not happen to compete against your own. But there is clearly a different philosophy that these sides have now, especially on the TNA side, that they were willing to allow their talent to work here and work with Scott DeMore instead of treat this as a show that was competitive to their own big show coming up this weekend.
So would you say it took attention away from an interest away from Bound for Glory?
I'm just saying that people's you know, financial resources are not infinite, and if you spent $30 on a pay-per-view this weekend and then you're being asked to spend another $30 next weekend, and the same with you are basically in the same market. Windsor and Detroit are like, these two venues are right next to each other. Sure. It's just like there's a reason, like, you want your, you know, you don't want to burden your fan base. And I can see a lot of people that were looked at this lineup, and this is a really impressive lineup. I think Bound for Glory has a very good lineup on Saturday, but there's, you know, it's that's the whole battle for, you know, finding your own audience for your shows. But anyway, those were the debut shows for Maple Leaf Pro Wrestling over the weekend. And our final notes before we get to Raw: SmackDown on Friday had a ton of competition. They were airing against the ALCS game between the Yankees and Guardians. They were up against the WNBA Finals and a Oregon-Purdue Big Ten college football game. So they fell to 1,378,000 viewers and a 0.42 in the 18 to 49 demographic, that coming from WrestleNomics. So they were down 17% in viewers, down 14% in the demo. These were their lowest numbers since moving to the USA Network. But in Canada, this was very impressive. So in Canada, they're going up against all the same sports. Plus, there was CFL. Plus, there was a Toronto Raptors preseason game. SmackDown was number one in the demo in Canada, ahead of the ALCS, ahead of, like, football, ahead of Raptors, CFL. Like, that blew my mind when I saw that stat. This Friday, they will be airing against Game 1 of the World Series between the Yankees and Dodgers. So you have the two biggest media markets meeting in the World Series. Major League Baseball is probably just over the moon that they have this as the World Series matchup. But yeah, that is going to be a very, I think, much a heavily watched series, and that begins Friday. Rampage fell to its lowest 18 to 49 audience in history. a 0.06, down 27% from last week, and 234,000 viewers, seventh lowest overall viewership in the show's history. Again, coming from WrestleNomics. Not a whole lot to add among Rampage beyond its it continues to falter. And this was the show. We had Private Party and MXM Collection in the main event. I don't even look at the lineups as necessarily a barometer at this point. I think Rampage is... It's interesting that they do seem to be trying to promote more. Like, we had the Rampage main event announced a week in advance this past Friday for this coming Friday show. I don't know what their viability is for Rampage, if they believe, like, there is a place that this thing could land. But, yeah, the... All-time lows are never...
I think it's too late. Just change the name, you know, like start fresh. I mean, it's a dead brand. And at this point, I think it would probably require more work to resuscitate it than just starting anew. So it just, you know, with maybe the discussions of like the new deal and Rampage not being announced, it does make these shows feel like lame duck shows.
All right. All of your news can be found over at postwrestling.com. Coming up this week, Kareem Zidane has launched a new podcast series looking at the history of Donald Trump with the UFC. So Kareem, who's been a great guest in the past, will be returning to Pollock and Thurston this coming Wednesday, 1 p.m. Eastern time, if you want to tune into that. And then later on this week, all of our regular shows coming at you, including Episode 7 of MCU Later, covering Agatha All Along. That'll be on the Cafe Friday, as will myself and Wei after SmackDown. Saturday, we have Collision Course. Wei Ting is going to be the last legend of a host, popping up when you least expect. And he will be joining Kate from Montreal for a free edition of Collision Course this Saturday night. John Cena and I will be doing a review of Bound for Glory. We're going to be putting that up Sunday morning, so listen to Collision Course Saturday, and first thing Sunday morning, you will have a Bound for Glory review on the Cafe feed. And then the week rounds out with NXT's Halloween Havoc with Davey and Brayden as costumes optional. We will see if they are going to replicate or come up with any new costumes for this year.
Oh, I look forward to that.
All right. And do check out the NWA podcast from Sunday night with Rich Fan joining Nate, Chris, and Two-Way Ray, and a great review of Royal Quest 4 from Bruce Lord and Karen Peterson. Collision Course, all of that stuff up at postwrestling.com and postwrestlingcafe.com. The political discussion is amping up as we get closer to this this election that is not happening in our country, way, but we're fascinated nonetheless.
Oh, yes. Yeah, we can't help it. So
we're just, you know, we have to watch from afar up here in Canada. So we head now to the U.S., to Philadelphia, the Wells Fargo Center. WrestleTix reporting 12,657 tickets distributed. Last time they were here in this arena was the night after WrestleMania 40 for Raw. So coming back here months later, Seth Rollins, during the arrivals, jumps Bronson Reed and attacks the man with his own luggage. And Rollins marches out to the ring, calls out Reed, says he's going to make him famous, and he wants to fight, but Adam Pearce warns him. So then we see a security member literally thrown upside down from the back into the arena, and it's Reed coming out, destroying security, making his way to the ring, and after a Death Valley driver, he teases the tsunami. Rollins rolls out, but takes a shoulder tackle, is placed onto the desk, and then Reed comes off for a tsunami, missing Rollins and crashing through the desk. And this would be our first of many pull-apart brawls between Seth Rollins and Bronson Reed, which is going to culminate with the announcement of their match for Crown Jewel.
Yeah, yeah. I thought they did a great job with this feud on this particular show. They are trying to create, I think, that same sort of like superhero intensity that we had with Strowman and Reed, but this time with Seth Rollins and Bronson Reed. And I guess for what, like, I don't know, Seth Rollins might lack in size that a Braun Strowman might have, Rollins has in like speed and intensity, and you could still create these really, really chaotic scenes using those two along with their seemingly endless supply of security guards that are very, very dedicated to their jobs. This one guy even, you know, climbing on Reed's back, risking his life like that. So they're just so much fun to watch, and they start the show off with such an incredible bang. And it wasn't a whole lot like of time ago where it felt like every Raw started with like a 20-minute talking segment, And we've gotten so far away from that. I'm really happy to see that.
No time for it.
You're right, yeah. But I'm just happy to see, like, they're just digging into a lot more different unique ways, I would say, of starting these shows. And this is certainly one of them.
So a hot start to Raw. Jackie Redmond interviews Damage Control, and they're previewing their match tomorrow night on NXT with Jackson and Legend. And in walk Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez, who just take over the shot. They just want to address the audience in the camera. And Liv cuts a promo on Nia Jax, calling her jealous. And then they get into an argument with Damage Control, leading to a challenge made for later tonight. And Raquel and even Liv looked like giants next to these two. I mean, this looked like this was photoshopped.
I have to think this, like, Liv was wearing some.
Liv was definitely wearing these boots with heels on them, and like even Raquel, like, look at her next to Kyrie and Io. This is
some Lee fit and camera trickery maybe involved in some of this. I don't know, but yeah, like, she was a whole head above Io and Kyrie. I'm talking about Liv Morgan, and then Raquel's like a whole head above, you know, Io Skies. Sorry, Liv Morgan. So this was an interesting scene, but yeah, we got our match later on.
And then Joe Tessitore mentions Samantha Irvin is moving on, and it's great to have Lillian Garcia back. And if you had whiplash, you weren't the only one. And then this was a first, because I have never heard of this tournament before. But, I mean, Paul Levesque always coming up with new ideas. Lillian Garcia introducing the next match, part of the number one container tournament.
Oh, man, rough. Her first on camera. I mean, we have no indication that she's a permanent replacement, and I don't at this point necessarily think that they've decided that. So, you know, this might as well have been something that you might consider something similar to an audition. And to kind of make this sort of screw up on your first on camera is very unfortunate. But, you know, we could probably expect quite a number of nerves attached to, you know, just even doing something like this for her.
Could barely contain those nerves.
Oh, rough.
Sorry. Come on. New Day and AOP is our first match of the show. And Kingston.
How would you feel? Would you like prefer maybe one of the other voices that are currently in their system to move up? Or do you like the idea of Lillian Garcia taking this role?
I think that if you're like, they have Mike Rome and Alicia Taylor, and I think they want to have their announcers that are assigned to each brand. I guess it probably, if Lillian Garcia wants the role, it's probably hers to have. It would just depend on her. Like, does she want to be on the road every week and doing this at this stage when you've kind of been through? Like, she started in 99, and you know, it's a pretty demanding job, even if you're doing just TV every week. But I would. Like, this does feel very abrupt, and I don't see them wanting to necessarily do a whole search if Lillian Garcia is willing to raise her hand and take the gig.
Yeah, but I guess what's the point of having people in your developmental system do these roles when you're just going to hire from the past anyway?
Well, I mean, it's the same for years when it looked like, you know, a Joe Tessitore gets the top job on Raw. It's not like they're, like, Vic Joseph is more than capable of doing it, but they want to have the person that has that recognition. And, you know, Lillian Garcia is someone that, you know, she does a lot of, like, national anthems and has that history on top of it, that I think that would most likely be their number one choice, because they really, like, unless they want to shake things up with who they already have.
Hmm.
So Karrion Kross and the Final Testament are ringside for this, with AOP in the match. And Kross is offering his hand to Xavier Woods as he's selling on the floor. Then The Miz appears ringside. We come back and Miz is standing with Kross and Scarlett. Kingston receives the hot tag and he goes for the Trouble in Paradise, but is caught by Rezar, who hits a fallaway slam. And then R-Truth comes out. I swear we had about 15 people at ringside for this match. And he jumps The Miz, then drops Kross, and the distraction leads to Kingston rolling up Rezar and pinning Rezar as New Day advances in the tag team tournament to join the War Raiders and one more team for the finals.
Mm-hmm. A rare case of these babyfaces actually doing well, it feels like, on the show like this. Usually,
well, this is setting them up for the ultimate disappointment, which will either be next week, or they get the tag title shot for the ultimate disappointment.
Yes, yes, we shall see. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. The Final Testament, Jump, Truth, and Woods. And Woods, this is after Truth is celebrating with the New Day and helping them win. So the Final Testament beat down Truth, and now Woods won't let Kofi Kingston return to the ring to help Truth. So a total hypocrite here. He took the help, and they got the win, but now he's explaining to Kofi that he's got to stay fresh for their next match next week. So he's the quarterback. The lights go out, and the Wyatts return, and they got a great reaction. They storm the ring, taking out Final Testament, and Miz is left alone in the ring when Uncle Howdy appears and Paul Ellering making the supreme sacrifice, pushing the Miz out of harm's way, and as the Marine is pushed to safety, Paul Ellering takes the mandible claw. And maybe I was reading too much into this, but the way this ended, I thought this was the end of Paul Ellering.
Oh, it very well could be. I mean,
he sold like death at the end of this, and I don't know. We'll see if we see Paul Ellering again. But this this kind of felt like the Final Testament for Ellering.
Honestly, he really wasn't offering much to this entire package. And for a guy that age doing that amount of travel every single week, I mean, let the man rest. You know, I just don't know. No, seriously, I kid, but like this is a stable with three managers, dude, and two act like a tag team. Three managers for one tag team. You know, Karrion Kross barely wrestles these days, and Ellering never speaks. So he's just really like he's just the Uncle Fester of the group. It's completely unnecessary. So maybe he joins the Wyatt Six. Maybe he becomes a new member.
Okay. Yeah. That's a possibility. Yeah. I'm open to it.
I like the way that they booked the Wyatt Six here. You know, like we haven't seen them in weeks. And then when they appear, it's just very simple. Lights out, music comes on. Here they are. Huge reaction to them. They're keeping them feeling fresh. They're getting the Sabu treatment, you know, like it keeps the intensity and keeps these appearances just feeling very special and very, very effective.
The formula is you show up. We'll do a week or two of some cryptic promos. We'll do the match in a couple of weeks. All out, street fight, no rules, on TV. And then they disappear for another 6 weeks. And then we just wash, rinse, repeat.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's great. The only thing I wish could have made this better is if all the QR code, like website, scavenger hunt stuff, just actually... Like none of that was relevant to this, and not to say like it needs to be, but like I guess I would like some sort of acknowledgement that like, hey, like if I did the work to go through all that stuff, that it would have had some sort of relevance to what I'm seeing on screen. Maybe it actually does, but I just hear nobody talk about it. You know,
I'm surprised that the QR code it took you to a church that clearly displayed a cross, and I'm just surprised that you didn't see that very obvious signal to where they were going. I'm surprised.
Yeah.
Jackie Redmond interviews Adam Pearce, and Reed walks up, so we get another brawl with the two of them, and Adam Pearce is screaming. Kathy Kelly speaks with Jey Uso and brings up the SmackDown appearance and confronting his family, and his response was, "I said what I needed to say. It is what it is." And that was all. Round two with Bron Breakker is coming up tonight. There was a video for Raquel Rodriguez. She is not going to allow Rhea Ripley to win the women's title as long as she is around. She blames Rhea for destroying Liv's shoulder and taking her out for 6 months and costing them the women's tag titles. Rhea only rose to the top because I was gone, and she is going to end this.
Mm-hmm. So we got a reason for why she's joined Liv Morgan here. It's because... When was this that Rhea cost Liv and Raquel that tag team title match?
I want to say it was over a year ago.
Right. Okay. Well, she holds a grudge, and I buy it. Fine. Yeah. It's you know, I saw video evidence of it. I can buy that she's still mad about that.
That's all you need. You just need a morsel of reality, and then you extrapolate.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Coming up this month on the Post Wrestling Cafe, we are bringing you three editions of Rewind Away, beginning with New Japan's Sakura Genesis from April of 2017 and the highly controversial match between Kazuchika Okada and Katsuyori Shibata. Later this month, we'll go back to October of 1987 with WWF's Saturday Night's main event on NBC, including title matches between Hulk Hogan and Sika, Honky Tonk Man against Randy Savage, and the Hart Foundation facing the Young Stallions. The month rounds out with WWE's Money in the Bank 2011, with CM Punk challenging John Cena for the WWE Championship in Chicago after the pipe bomb promo. Plus, Karen Peterson presents a special show focusing on the Queen of Villains on Netflix, weekly editions of Rewind to SmackDown and Collision Course, ad-free shows, news and audio updates sent directly to your email, and so much more beginning at $6 per month, which provides instant 30-day access and extensive archives going back to 2017. PostWrestlingCafe.com. So the Road Warriors, Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez, took on Damage Control.
And I was asking this on Friday if we've even seen the women's version of these Crown Jewel Championships. Evidently they were on display on Friday. I just missed them. But they gave them the Stanley Cup treatment tonight. And it does definitely look smaller. And you can definitely tell, like, in the shot where Liv Morgan is actually standing behind them, they do look like a scaled down, smaller version.
Well, I mean, it's progress.
Yeah. It should be, I would say. Like, otherwise it'd be way too tough for her to, I think, lift it over her head.
They were promoting this tonight as, I think they said 150 carats of, they actually had the number of stones in the belt, and the most expensive title ever made, which I don't know if your fan base really has that emotional connection to the expense attached to a particular trophy. But it's nice. Like, can they pawn them afterwards? Like, what if they went to Crown Jewel and instead of these titles, like, the winner gets like a 401k? They get health insurance for like 5 years. They get no cut contracts.
Right. Yeah, I don't know if the Saudi government would have that offering. No.
Well, let's go to our tag match featuring our independent contractors. They double teamed Raquel. Both hold on to her legs. This was like two children going after like mom, and she tries to elbow drop them and miss both. Raquel lays out both with lariats, and then Liv just goes to pose with the Crown Jewel title. That's our commercial setup. Sane lands a spinning back fist to make the tag to Sky, and Sky hits a dragon screw on Raquel, a springboard missile drop kick on Liv, and then they do the pop-up elbow combo with Sane driving down with the insane elbow. But Raquel dives in, saving her partner, then is sent into the post shoulder first, and Sky yanks Chikara Jackson over the barricade, so Lash Legend nails her, causing the DQ, and Damage Control send Lash into the ring, where Lash Legend and Chikara Jackson each hit their finishers, the Sugar Rush and the Lash Extension, and they have a big face-off with Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez when Rhea's music plays. But before we get to that part, the Sugar Rush or the Lash Extension?
I like both those names for them. Come on, it makes sense. Like, you know, she's the lollipop and Lash Extension.
The Lash Extension.
Why not? I think it works. I think it's cool. I thought both of the finishes, more importantly, looked good. You know, like, in every TV appearance that these two have had, I think they've delivered on what's expected of them. I would even go as far as to say that they've impressed with how comfortable they both seem to be with a main roster focus and a main roster spotlight. So what is this now? Like, four consecutive main roster TV shows that have featured these two?
More important, every time they show up, they're interacting with a new team, and like, I just take this as their call-up at this point until I see otherwise. Yeah. Like, yes, they're still doing, like, they're doing NXT tomorrow with Damage Control, but it feels like they're on the main roster now.
They are more main roster than Alba Fyre and Isla Dawn have ever been, okay? And those two used to be champions. Like, these two, Jakar Jackson and Lash Legend, feel way more integrated into, you know, the main roster on both shows, on both brands.
And this is when there is less room on these shows than ever. And they're making time for these two every week on both shows.
Yeah. So all three.
Yes. Rhea enters headbutting Raquel, but Raquel doesn't go down. Raquel runs at Rhea and goes over the top to the floor. And so Rhea gets her hands on Liv, but gets nailed with a code breaker. But then Liv eats a knee and gets put into the prism trap when Raquel is drop kicked off the apron. And then Dominic appears, saving Liv from the riptide. But Rhea grabs Dominic. And this is when this audience goes nuts. They did not care about her getting her hands on Liv, but the idea of her attacking Dom, they went nuts. And the place explodes as she goes for the prism trap on Dom, but Liv and Raquel save Dominic, and we had Tomohiro Ishii here gnawing on the rope.
That can't be good for your TMJ.
No, not at all. But yeah, there you
great are. Reactions really for everything as always with the Rhea and Liv. Still a whole lot of life in this entire feud.
And then it was time for our third pull apart between Rollins and Bronson Reed. This time, Adam Pearce booking them for Crown Jewel.
Mm-hmm.
NXT commercial for what they're dubbing as NXT 2300, where we had the ECW theme music, old ECW footage. You know, ECW might have lost money, but WWE reaped the profits of this brand. And there was Shawn Michaels telling people at the ECW arena, if you know, you know.
You know what? Like, if I knew that ECW used to run here?
Yeah, I guess it's a carefully guarded secret.
Yes. ECW original Shawn Michaels. Yes. I wonder if Shawn has... Did he have any, I guess, opinion on ECW at the time? I wonder.
I'm sure he had a very high opinion of ECW in 96. I'm sure.
Sure. Okay.
So there you go. War Raiders vignette. They are standing around a bonfire, roasting marshmallows, and they are heading into their future without fear. That's good. They look to their ancestors, the Viking warriors of the past, for inspiration. They crossed oceans to conquer everything in their path. So I imagine they're going to be wrestling internationally.
What?
They've got to cross oceans, right?
I mean, if the WWE runs a show there in their book, then yeah. Okay. But, you know, anyway. Listen, so last week was their re-debut. Got the old name back. Did they have a new finisher?
Well, it's a different... It's the Fallout, but yeah, it is different than the previous Fallout.
Kind of modified, right? Okay. Like, the fresh coat of paint. This promo didn't do much for me. Like, it just sounded very similar to their old stuff where they're just kind of speaking about, like,
the Disciples of Apocalypse are back.
Yeah, like, except they're in vests, you know? Like, I think they just need to try something a lot more drastically different from what they were doing before, which was just, like, looking at a camera, talking about, like, their love, I don't know, their Viking history and, like, being inspired by the gods and all that other shit. Like, it's just not connecting. Just, you know, they need to be, I think, a bit more grounded. They need to do stuff, you know, like, show them, like, what do they actually do? Do they hang out at bars? Do they... Like, are they chopping trees in the forest? I don't know. Just give us some, like, more relatable, cool-looking interactions rather than just this sort of dialogue about, like, you know, our Viking ancestors.
Have you ever watched that show Alone?
No.
Have you heard of it?
Mm-mm. No.
I started watching it on the weekend just randomly. My wife thought I would enjoy it. It's like the crazier version of Survivor where they take these people... They load them with GoPros and they just put them in the middle of nowhere to survive on their own. And it's like these areas of Canada that are infested by like grizzly bears, and they just have to live off of like this small item of lists, the small list of items that they're allowed to bring with them. And they have no one to talk to. They only have their GoPros. And it's like, dude, this one dude like runs into a mountain lion. There's bears coming after them. It's like this thing has been going for years and years and years. I've just never watched it, but it's wild.
Wouldn't that be a great idea? I'm sure there's some great idea in there for the Viking Raiders. Like maybe
absolutely put them on the show for 4 months in the cold, and then they come back.
Show them skinning a bear in the woods. Okay.
Oh yeah, they just full out kill animals on this show. I mean,
don't know if I could watch that. But.
Well, Judgment Day in the clubhouse, and Raquel is looking for Rhea Ripley, and Liv needs to focus on Nia Jax, and Balor is concerned about Damian Priest going for the world title. I don't know why he's so concerned with this. Wouldn't that, like, he could probably weasel his way into a title shot then?
Sorry, who?
Balor. He's worried about Priest getting another title shot.
Well, this is all just to kind of set up the Dominic story, isn't it?
Dominic asks if he could be the one to beat Gunther, and everyone laughs, but he's not laughing. Raquel then looks at Carlito and says, "What do you do around here?" This is the question of every observer of this show. And he explains, "I bring the cool factor. I'm also the fixer." And that would be an interesting story. The fixer at WWE. And he is off to speak to Adam Pearce.
So, you know, I don't get the sense Balor is in direct competition with Damian Priest anymore, but they're trying to, what, get Dom to stop him?
Yes, yes. They're trying to preserve segments on the show in the two-hour format.
Sure. Right.
Rey Mysterio and Dragon Lee with Zelina Vega taking on American Maid with Chad Gable and Ivy Nile in the corner, and Trick Williams taking in the show in the front row.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Julius does that incredible deadlift suplex from like the seated position to lift Ray. This thing never doesn't look impressive. And then he deadlifts Lee. There's a military press that Lee turns into a Rana. Dragon Lee looked really good in this match, and he actually had some time to shine in this one. The crowd is chanting for a 619, and then they catch Ray's Cabrata, and both Creeds hit moonsaults to him. Then Dragon Lee is in, hits a double stomp on Julius, hits a Tope Con Hero, and then the 619 is blocked by Gable on the apron. So Vega goes after Gable, head scissors Nile, and then there is a Rana to Julius, and Julius has to so awkwardly put himself into position for the 619. And then Lee pulls Julius, pins Julius after the 619 and a frog splash. So Rey Mysterio and Dragon Lee advance, joining the New Day and the War Raiders, which is quite the eclectic three-way match.
Yeah, it certainly is, yeah.
Two big bases that you do have here, so that's something for the War Raiders to be. And yeah, did they announce this for next week? I believe so.
I think so. You would expect, yeah. I thought it was a good match. Both teams are looking really good. I think the Creeds are doing really well as these heel characters. They definitely seem to be finding their personalities in ring. So, I don't know. They've certainly been losing a lot. So, but as long as they're doing those like great videos, in front of the Hummers, I think the audience is still going to absolutely love them.
Maybe they need to do a sit down interview.
I'd love that. With who? Who's? Oh, gotcha. With The Undertaker. Yeah.
That's it. Yeah. Pierce is with Damage Control, and he promises he's going to figure out a solution regarding Lash Legend and Chikara Jackson. They have a match tomorrow. That seems like as good a solution as you're going to get. And then Carlito enters. And
so what do you think that is in reference to? I mean, he mentioned with the other GM. So could that just be calling to like them actually getting drafted
or traded?
Traded. Okay. So somebody's going to NXT in exchange for them.
That would be a crappy solution. It's like, hey, you know, these two that have been bothering you guys, we're going to take them to Raw and we're sending you guys to NXT.
Interesting. Well, not the worst idea. You know, I'm sure there's a team that could use that.
Carlito walks in, and as Damage Control leaves, he remarks, "I need to learn Chinese."
He did say that, yeah. So I guess you're looking to me to
I'm
see
not,
if I was
I'm
offended.
I'm not putting you in the spot here, but I'm not going to...
You're fine to ask that. Now, was I offended? I mean, he's supposed to be the idiot. We're supposed to be laughing at him, right?
Like, this guy's the fixer.
He thinks he is, but he's not a very effective one. I mean, he's just, I don't get mad, like, when you're trying to, you know, write lines for the village idiot, and he sounds dumb. So, yeah.
Well, at least they're not ninjas, I guess.
No.
So there's that. He pitches Dominic as the next challenger to Gunther. Pierce thinks this is a joke, but then comes around and says if Dominic can beat a former champion next week, he'll consider it. So that set up for next week too. Jackie Redmond is with Bron Breakker. He respects Jay as champion, but he's not focused because of the family drama. That's why I'm going to win. And I'm a badass. And it's time to do what badasses do. We got any dogs barking in Philly? bless this man for taking this catchphrase and trying to make it as much as he can. But it's, I can't wait for this to become a t-shirt.
Like, can you imagine, like in that John Oliver piece that, you know, you posted that he re-uploaded on a show. Can you imagine if a clip like this airs to like that audience, how much, like how ridiculous this sounds?
They'd probably grab the Bronson Reed clip first of the exploding table.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah, it just doesn't make the dude sound cool out of context. But in this world, like, I think he's cool as hell, you know? And it's because the physicality makes up for so much of, like, I think the stupid stuff that he says.
Kathy is with Gunther, our world champion. This is his one segment on the show backstage. He says, Cody loves drama. And dragging his daughter into this was not necessary. He's a fantastic champion, but the title he's holding has a legacy that was established long before Cody. I am one of one, and everything I touch turns to gold. So he will be in Brooklyn on Friday for a face-to-face with Cody Rhodes. I can't wait for this face-to-face, because there's just all these segments, they just don't have enough time to convey all the thoughts that these two individuals have before this match, this being the latest one. So Damian Priest walks in. He explains, I have no issue with you. My issues were with Judgment Day. Now they're over, and I should get back what I never lost. And he's not looking for a handout. I'm going to earn it after Crown Jewel, and you're going to have a problem with me. And Gunther responds, okay, El Campeón, good for you.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what Priest calls himself.
Yes. So there you have it. A future match as well.
I would think either for the TV leading to Survivor Series or possibly for Survivor Series itself.
Yeah, maybe. That's as good a spot as any. It's just very obvious. Like, until this Cody match happens, like, they've got nothing for Gunther. Like, these two, mm-hmm. like, they're on their separate shows, and we're just building to this match.
I mean, it is sort of part of the, you know, awkwardness of having two different champions on two different brands promoting one single match. But I think they've actually been doing a pretty decent job of it this cycle.
Look at this belt, folks. Look at this belt. Oh, it's big. It's really big. And then the main event, Jey Uso and Braun Breaker for the Intercontinental title. We go to a break right away, and Braun is in control, and he goes for a cover after a power slam, but gives up or doesn't continue the cover because he has to do push-ups. And then he hits a standing moonsault, and I'm pretty sure this is what I heard the man say. He yells to the crowd, I'm a badass. I do this. Yes. That would be my new tagline. I do this. So then Braun hit the top rope Frankensteiner. You know, until the Bloodline showed up, this one did not have a whole lot of heat for a show that had, main event. Like, it just felt like it was like very subdued.
For me, I think I'm sensing like the type of pattern match that they're trying to put give us with this Jey Uso babyface run, and it's just sell, you know, until you get to the end. Like, work slow until you ramp things up and he can do his high spots, and it's worked out really well for him. But what you're kind of describing was, you know, the slower part. Yeah.
And this layout, this is not a anomaly either. Like, mm-hmm. when I like am doing these notes, like the first half of this match, like there's almost nothing to talk about. Mm-hmm. And then when all the run-ins happen, like traditionally, that would almost be your turnoff to the match. But this crowd, they start chanting, this is awesome. Like, they were all into it. Like, the more bodies, the better. Like, that's what they wanted to see. And perhaps it was also the who was getting involved. But this all picks up as Solo Sikoa and Jacob Fatu appear ringside, and they got tickets. They are among the 12,000. And he bought a shirt. Well, look at this consumerism. He probably dropped a fair amount here. Front row seats and a Yeet shirt. So the crowd starts chanting OTC, and Jey walks up to them. And Solo explains, I'm just trying to help you. And Jey catches Braun sneaking up from behind and runs Braun into the post. Then Jay's against the barricade when Tonga Loa appears, and Jey super kicks him. Tama Tonga leaps off the barricade. He gets super kicked. And now Solo jumps over the barricade to argue with Jey. And Jey sidesteps as Braun kind of spear solo, more like a flying clothesline that was an attempted spear. So he takes down Jacob Fatu, and Fatu gets up. And when he walks up to Braun, this place goes insane for this showdown between Jacob Fatu and Braun Breaker. And they're going nose to nose when Jay dives onto both. He hits an Uso splash, but lands on the knees of Braun. And then leapfrogs a spear, lands a pair of super kicks, and then Jay spears Braun, hits the Uso splash for a huge near fall. And the Tongans distract the referee. Pierce and the producers are out to remove Tongaloa and Tama Tonga when Jay sprints around the ring and gets blindsided by a super kick from Jacob Fatu and is hit with a Samoan drop on the desk. Braun sees this all happening. He smiles, rolling Jay into the ring and hits the super spear. And the badass barks his way to a second intercontinental victory. Why? Because he does this.
Yes, he does. And he did it tonight. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you look at this closing scene at the end, and I don't think you can, for me, say that this was anything but a success. A really hot main event by the end of this, you know, like these sort of run-ins and such an angle-heavy close to a show might not be everybody's cup of tea, but clearly it's what this entire, I would say, bloodline story has kind of been built on. Not necessarily like, you know, great belt-to-belt action, but like eventful, you know, things that are happening in the bodies of these matches, running in and costing each other matches and screwing each other and then getting revenge on those people. So this entire thing, I think, has been really interesting what they've done, because I don't think Levesque has been booking these sort of like 1 month reigns so much, especially with the IC championship that he's, you know, obviously been rebuilding and done a great job with Gunther. So doing this 1 month reign with Jey Uso is kind of like out of his wheelhouse, in my opinion, but I think it's worked out really well. Jey Uso in that amount of time feels like he's taken to at least a slightly higher level. I would even say like, yeah, definitely higher level. And then Braun Breaker, just kind of continuing his run, that's fine. But Jay losing the championship now gives him far more motivation to link up with the rest of the bloodline.
So I like the booking of this for where you're going, the story that you are trying to, you know, push Jay towards. I thought you got a lot of value out of a relatively short title run, but not all title runs need to be a year. And it's what you can get out of that time and giving some direction and motivation post title loss. And Jay has that to a huge degree.
The only question is like, what exactly was happening with Braun in the week after he lost the championship? Like, and he was cutting that promo on Gunther. What sort of course correction did they commit, you know, in that time?
You know, in this world, there's shades of gray. And sometimes you've got to fight evil with evil. Maybe they can give him. He was storyline concussed, and he thought he was going up to Jey Uso to ask for a rematch, and he just saw the first guy holding a championship.
Interesting. Also, really interesting the tease of Braun Breaker versus Jacob Fatu. I mean, this, you know, obviously very deliberate, but both of them are heels right now. We're probably not getting this match anytime soon, but I could see a showdown, for instance, I don't know, like at the Royal Rumble, and certainly maybe more of a feeling out process to see the audience's demand, and the audience definitely wants something like this in the future.
This is the type of thing I think you just, you know, note this and you file it away, because like this could be a main event in a year's time.
Absolutely.
That they could have. And that should be, when you're this hot, you should always be making your aggressive stance of like creating your next wave of stars, because you can see when a company is cold and how hard it is to elevate that level. Like New Japan's going through that right now. You know, AEW is going to be trying it with their kind of like Darby Orange Cassidy level. But, you know, you have a number of guys that are on deck, and you always want to be, you know, churning out those next level of stars. But there you go. I thought, like, pacing wise, I thought this was a Raw. Like, last week we had the tape show. The week before was the first 2 hour show that I felt like they didn't have the pacing down. This one felt like they had four matches spread out over 2 hours. You had the thread of Rollins and Reed throughout the show, and leading to a pretty big main event with some consequences coming out of it. So I thought overall, and I don't know if you noticed, 2-hour edition of Raw as well.
No, I did notice. I'm getting used to it. Yeah, I'm very much
getting used to it.
I thought it was a good show that ended strong and gave you enough like relevant content to make it worthwhile. I do feel like this was a show that was kind of lacking the star power, though. You know,
no Drew, no CM Punk. Like, yeah. there's a big omission when you have both of those guys that are off.
Totally. Even Gunther, I think, like, didn't have a very substantial appearance.
No.
You know, he didn't really say anything in his promo and didn't really do much. So, yeah, I thought this was, like, a bit more lacking in terms of star power for a 2-hour edition of the show. But, you know, overall, like, it's still productive, especially with Rollins and Reed. And I guess, you know, this Jay and Braun story, of course.
So that brings us up. We've got 3 matches for Crown Jewel with the addition of Seth and Bronson Reed. And... Yeah, we will see.
How many weeks?
Two weeks.
2 weeks
until Crown Jewel. So they have another week of TV.
So that's 3 matches, probably 2 left, right? Or do you expect more for Crown Jewel?
No, I don't. I think that's probably around the amount you could expect. And I guess it's only a question if you're going to put a Reigns on that show. And typically, I would say just wait until War Games. But being Saudi Arabia, I could see Reigns getting put in there in some fashion.
Now hold on. Last year's Crown Jewel had 7 whole matches, John, including a prelim match.
Okay. Well, I don't know if they have 7 programs ready.
8 matches, including the prelim. I
don't even know if they have that many programs going that you could put here.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, we'll see.
I mean, you could fill it out to be that many. I don't see why you need them. Well, now we do have a piece of feedback, and if you have any super chats, you can submit those too.
Well, we got a super chat here from Jake, who sends $5. Thank you, as always, for the support, Jake, from the Windy City. I would like to learn more about the history of Maple Leaf Wrestling and the Tunney family. Any books or resources you know of?
I do. There is.
John is reaching, looking in his very, very, very large collection of wrestling literature that sits behind him. And of course, you're speaking to the real librarian here of pro wrestling.
There you go.
What is it?
This is a book by Andrew Calvert. It's called, this is a spinoff of the other book he did. Look up Andrew Calvert. He has 2 books on kind of the history of Maple Leaf Wrestling. That is where I would recommend you go check out Andrew Calvert.
Interesting. Okay. Yes.
Great historian. And he's put out 2 books on the history of
From Nanjo to the Sheik.
Yes.
Tales
that,
from.
That's the one you should start with. And then the other book I just showed you, that one is kind of extra stuff that didn't make it into the first book.
Interesting. Okay. Well, Jake, you asked the right person, clearly. Thank you very much, John, for that. I was going to say the same thing.
Oh, you were. Okay. Yeah. We have a piece of feedback here from Manny from Pacoima. A pretty okay edition of Raw. The majority of the matches were okay. I was really looking forward to the Creeds versus LWO, but felt it didn't get to deliver like all 4 competitors are capable of. I wasn't a fan of what Carlito said after he saw Damage Control walk off. The build to War Games continues as the Bloodline cost Jay the title. While it was a short reign, it makes sense that they would interfere. Do you think the plan was for Breaker to win it back? Did the Ilya injury possibly change plans given we got the Gunther Breaker tease, or did the Crown Jewel belt change plans? I mean, it's possible the Ilya stuff threw a wrench into wherever they were going. But, I mean, based off that first week, I didn't see Breaker in the IC title picture at all when they were teasing him with Gunther. So I think there was definitely a change that was very noticeable.
Well, who was Dragunov paired with prior to this? He had interactions with
Well, he was at first... like feuding, like the Judgment Day was warning him to stay away. So it felt like he was going to be involved with the Judgment Day. And maybe that would at some point lead to whether it be an alliance with Jay or challenging him. But it seemed to be like he was attached to the Judgment Day. And maybe that kind of explains like Judgment Day, like at least the male members of Judgment Day kind of being in sort of no man's land.
Mm. Okay.
And he also says he was at GCW's show on Saturday in LA And similar to Corey, I enjoy the imperfections and the rawness of Game Changer Wrestling. Their cards aren't always perfect, and sometimes matches and shows can go on a bit too long, but I enjoy the community aspect of GCW between the fans and performers, both before and after the shows. To finish off, I wanted to share some pictures. If you want to check some very nice photos he took at the show, they're up at forum.postwrestling.com in the thread, if you want to check out those. Very nice photos there.
Nicely tinted black and white. Lovely. Very cool.
All right.
Thank you.
Well, thank you to all listening and checking out Rewind to Raw. That'll bring an end to the show. Brayden and Davey are going to be up on Tuesday night with the go-home edition of NXT before Halloween Havoc. And the lineup for NXT includes Damage Control against Jakara Jackson and Lash Legend. Julia teams with Stephanie Vaquer against two members of Fatal Influence. Oba Femi against Luca Crucifino, and Jada Parker taking on Tatum Paxley, as well as appearances by Trick Williams and Ethan Page ahead of their title match. And then we are back Wednesday night with Rewind to Dynamite, which the show takes place in Salt Lake City, Utah, with Mark Briscoe and Chris Jericho in the Ladder War for the ROH Championship, Shelton Benjamin against Sammy Guevara, Queen Aminata versus Camille, the Young Bucks and Jack Perry against Daniel Garcia and Private Party, House of Black will have a match, and Kyle Fletcher will appear on the show.
Cool. All right. Well, I'll talk to you then, I guess.
Oh, that sounds so final. Okay.
Well, I'm just saying we don't have another show in between that.
That's true. Yeah. I won't talk to you until Wednesday night. Well, I will miss you, Wei, and we will miss all of you. But we will be back, as always. So tune in at postwrestling.com. Good night and goodbye.
Did you know Tide has been upgraded to provide an even better clean in cold water? Tide is specifically designed to fight any stain you throw at it, even in cold. Butter? Yep. Chocolate ice cream? Sure thing. Barbecue sauce? Tide's got you covered. You don't need to use warm water. Additionally, Tide Pods let you confidently fight tough stains with new ColdZyme technology. Just remember, if it's got to be clean, it's got to be Tide.